Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Larry Bikey, representing the appellant in this case, Tri-Miller Inc. This case began as an adverse possession case. The appellee, who was a plaintiff in that case, sued my client, among others, for adverse possession. Now, the trial court denied that relief, but Tri-Miller conceded a portion of the property because there were a couple of irrigation risers in place that they didn't want to disturb. The legal description submitted then by Tri-Miller was adopted by the trial court. This case, though, is before the court on plaintiff's motion to modify that judgment. Plaintiffs requested in that motion additional real estate be added to the judgment. This was an out-of-term motion, and it was originally made under Statute 25-2001. It was pleaded under that statute and submitted, argued under that statute. The trial court, however, agreed. We argued that it wasn't properly submitted under that, and the trial court agreed. However, the trial court went ahead and granted relief requested by plaintiffs. Now, there are two ways to obtain a modification of an out-of-term judgment, 25-2001 and the court's independent equity jurisdiction. Now, I believe that appellee argues in their brief that they are not proceeding under 25-2001. They're only relying on the equity jurisdiction of the court.
Mr. Bikey,
yes.
Doesn't 25-2001 subsection 2 recognize the independent equity jurisdiction of the court, and that independent equity jurisdiction isn't limited by the statute?
Right. The way I interpret that is the ability of the court to offer relief is not limited by that section. It expands the relief that the court can offer. However, it's still my argument, you've got to go through the proper procedures dictated. And the procedure, what my argument is initially, first, that to entitle the appellee to equitable relief, you have to prove that there's no adequate remedy at law. Okay? The cases have held, what that means is you have to prove that 25-2001 does not apply, that you don't fit into this. Okay? Plaintiffs did not plead that. They argued, in fact, not equity, but 25-2001. And it appears that, in fact, the court bases its decision, the trial court, on that statute, not independent equity jurisdiction. So my argument is there was never any attempt or any proof that there was no adequate remedy at law. In fact, I think if you look at 25-2001, what appellees argued very well might fit into that statute, Section 4. But there was no proof. In any event. The second error I've raised, is about the legal description. Okay. Initially, I briefed this indicating there's not a sufficient legal description. Well, apparently the cross appeal and appellee's brief agrees with me 100%. So I think that reduces the issue to, are they entitled to a remand? Or are we entitled to dismissal? Okay. Now, I'll be the first to admit we didn't brief that, okay? However, there are a lot of adverse possession cases out there that hold that one of the elements you required for adverse possession is to have establish a definite legal boundary, something that you can describe and pass on through the register of deeds.
Mr. Bikey, based upon the record we have now,
yes,
is it possible, in your opinion, to have an adequate legal description of the easement that the court ultimately granted?
No, no.
And so how do we deal with the fact that the appellant did ask for leave to get an additional survey?
How do we deal with it? I think it's incumbent on the movement to prove their case. Okay? They didn't prove their case. If you're bringing a motion to modify an adverse possession judgment, and one of the requirements is a definite legal description, it's incumbent upon you to present that evidence. Okay? They did not present that evidence.
Okay? I.e. the legal description?
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
So it shouldn't be remanded. You're saying they can't have it remanded back for determination of a legal description.
That's my position, yes. After not briefing this, I did look for some authority to see if I could find an adverse possession case that allowed a remand, and I didn't find one. That doesn't mean it doesn't exist out there, but the cases I found indicated that is essentially an element of their case. So you've got to prove that element. And that's our contention. Now, there is a kind of a peripheral issue here.
Was that argued to the district court?
Was what argued?
Did you make that argument to the district court
about the legal description?
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Yes. We had just a small amount of time. The transcript shows maybe a page of argument.
Right.
But I'm sure I raised that. Yes. Yes.
Okay.
The peripheral issue I wanted to raise is about the definition of a culvert. What we're arguing about here is a culvert. The trial court refers to culvert, we refer to culvert, and I think we're talking about apples and oranges here. A culvert is simply a pipe that leads water elsewhere. This culvert is not at issue here. What is at issue here is the concrete portion around the culvert. The only exhibit in the case, Exhibit 50, has two photographs attached, and it shows clearly that this concrete portion is the problem here. We are not, and there's no claim that the actual culvert is on Tri-Miller's property. It isn't. In the court's legal description, they say they give Appalee the easement for their continued use of the culvert used to supply water to their reuse pit. Well, that's fine. They have the use of that. What the court's really talking about is the structure that is around this culvert. If you look at those photographs, it's clear from that. I'll say whatever.
You're saying the court meant that when they entered the first order? Because the first order, they granted them the use of the culvert.
Granted, I'm sorry, you're right.
But the second one, they gave them an easement.
Yes.
So which time are we talking about?
There lies the ambiguity. Initially, the court gave money for the culvert, the structure. And
include the concrete.
The concrete structure, yes. That's what the problem was, the concrete structure. The second time, the court talks about the culvert.
The metal part.
I don't know. I don't know what they're talking about.
Mr. Beike, does it make a difference that the court in its second order required Tri-Miller to grant an easement rather than explicitly awarding an easement? And I ask that in the context of whether it's appropriate to remand to get an exact legal description. Or could it be presumed the court thought the parties would work that out?
I don't think so. These parties are never going to work out anything. The easement, my understanding is you have to have something definite enough that you can file it with the Register of Deeds. This isn't definite enough. Just telling the parties to work out something is not going to be a definite enough easement that you could file it, and whoever the purchaser of this real estate would be in the future would know what it is.
Thank Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
May it please the court, I'm Luke T. Deaver, along with Taylor A. LaRue, appearing on behalf of the plaintiff, appellee, Dave and Patricia Nelson. May it please counsel and all the parties present. Couple issues mentioned I was going to clarify. This is a, what we're kind of asking for is a common sense approach. I think the court notes in the brief, I was not trial counsel, so some of the specifics as to what was argued in motion, I was limited to just the record. The reason why I think it's a common sense approach is what we've got is the court, in a quiet title action, which as the court well knows is founded on equity, was brought by the plaintiffs to a disputed 1.7 acre tract. Our clients offered a survey, a very detailed survey of the entire 1.7 acres, and the defendant offered a limited, less definite 1.8 acre tract survey. The court did award the quiet title action, in my reading of the order, to the appellee, the Nelsons, but did so on the defendant's survey, which was the 1 acre tract. I believe the record shows, based upon the email that was submitted with the motion by the appellee's former attorney, Mr. Tringe, that it was just assumed that the culvert was within the 1 acres. Afterwards, they did some, evidently did some marking of the area and found out the culvert, whatever that means, was not included within the 1 acres. And so the appellee filed a motion to modify the judgment based upon 25-2001. Now, the motion cites a statute, but I don't think mere recitation of a statute is reliance exclusively on that statute. As the court pointed out, subsection 2 references equity, and the court and the motion just merely says 25-2001. And it doesn't specify any of the reasons under subsection 4 of that statute, which provide the A through G reasons to vacate or modify a motion under them that subsection. And it's important to note that because statute 25-2005 is the statute that the appellant is using that says that the ability to vacate a, 25-2002, that the proceedings to vacate or modify a judgment shall be upon a complaint. Well, the upon a complaint requirement is only for the issues set forth in subsection 4, which the appellee did not plead, nor did the court find. The court did actually find in its November 18th order, and I wanted to clarify this, that the motion as to the statutory authority under 25-2001 is denied. But it says the court sustains a motion on equitable grounds to fulfill the intent of the order and judgment filed on February 27th, 2014. And then it ordered, as the court pointed out, the easement issue. I will concede I think the easement issue does present some ambiguities in the record. If that order was filed with the clerk or the Register of Deeds, it would provide less certainty than I think the parties would need. And so we're asking for a remand as to get that survey. Mr. Tringe at the oral, at the motion in the record, did ask for leave for survey. I assume part of that was because I've had quiet title actions before, and getting a surveyor arranged within a limited time is not likely. It could take several months, and so there might not have been a period of time to get the surveyor to get the necessary exhibit prior to the hearing on the motion to modify.
Counsel, do you think that there was a way of getting this modification through a legal remedy as opposed to an equitable remedy?
Could you rephrase the question?
Do you think that it's possible to have come in and asked for a legal remedy rather than an equitable remedy for what you were requesting?
I think it was better to ask for the equitable remedy than the...
I understand it would be better, but...
Is it possible?
Don't you have to, in theory, don't you have to eliminate all possibility of being able to obtain a legal remedy in order to obtain an equitable remedy?
Correct. I guess if I'm understanding the question correctly, I would submit that it was a quiet title action, so it just rested on equity.
So it was an equity to start with, and it just stayed in equity?
In my humble opinion, yes. Right. And because we're dealing with the easement, which may not have been the way I would have argued it, but that's what the court issued, it rested in equity. And I don't know if Mr. Tringe or the appellee at that time had to prove at the motion to modify that they were out, without any adequate remedies of law. I think... the idea was they were just proceeding with that quiet title action. The court found an issue on the quiet title, granted the 1 acres, 1 acre tract rather than 1.7 acre tract. I believe the record shows that the parties just assumed that including the culvert, They went out and marked it, did not include the culvert. We're still within the 6 months, even though the term had ended. And so I think since we're in the 6 months, it falls under 25-2001, that you, subsection one, that you can do it by motion. Not, it doesn't have to be a complaint. And the court pointed out that a subsection two allows for that equitable jurisdiction. And so the court took it up on equity, granted an easement. I think for the sake of the record, it would be better to allow leave to get surveys to come in and clean it up that way. And so we're asking for the remand back to the trial court to clean that issue up. Now the question Judge Irwin asked about the authority to do so, I think we're different than initial quiet title action. This was a quiet title action that we had a final order, and then there was a motion to modify. And so it's not an original quiet title action. Again, we're just asking the court to modify its order to include what the court found was the intent of its order to include that culvert.
Because right now you have an order that's inconsistent with what the trial court was apparently trying to accomplish first go around.
Correct. Correct. And I haven't talked to Mr. Trinch precisely about the timing of it. I know when it came down, and he's since retired, the timing was an issue, but I don't know where the survey was. And I know he wanted to get the leave, because I asked him about that question, but he wanted to leave to get the supplemental survey in, so we knew a meets and bounds of whatever that right. structure was.
Right. And I take it you agree that information is not in either of the surveys that were presented at the initial trial, that there's no way to specifically identify the location of the culvert.
Yes, correct.
And that wasn't your initial intent, I take it, at trial. Was your intent was you wanted the whole 1.7, and that's what you surveyed?
Correct, yeah. Our we came to court with our duty because we gave a legal description of what we wanted. The court granted our relief, but then adopted the defendant's survey, which we said is like less definite, and turns out the culvert wasn't it. And so we're kind of stuck with this middle ground, and the court's order, I think, made it fairly clear. The court's order on November 18th said, the court was under the impression, based upon the evidence at trial, that the culvert was on the plaintiff's, Nelson's land. And then it goes to find that under equity, that easement should be granted. And I think that became problematic because of the lack of a legal description. And so we're asking the court for a common sense approach to remand the case back to get that legal description, because there's also the unique issue of what happens, and that would be a separate theory with res judicata, but if the appellant's argument is correct that we had to do this by complaint, well, there's still a two-year statute of limitations issue, and so unless there's a res judicata defense, we could still file a complaint and proceed under that time frame. And we're just asking that the motion be heard based on equity and that remand be given to the trial court to get that legal description.
Did the district court find that this case did not come within 2001 sub 4, that there was not a legal remedy here?
I believe the district court.
I think it did.
Yeah, it found in.
And this is a follow-up to Judge Inbody's question. There wasn't a legal remedy, was there?
I don't believe there was. If you look,
okay. Maybe I misunderstood you. I thought you said there was a legal remedy.
Oh, sorry. I don't believe there was a legal remedy.
Because you don't get, at least arguably, your position is, and the court seems implicitly, if not explicitly, was that 2001 sub 4 is not satisfied.
Correct. Yeah.
There's your legal remedy if you had one.
Mm-hmm.
So then the court says, despite the requirements, it can grant, I'm just looking at my notes here, it can grant an easement to the Nelsons to enforce the intent of the order and judgment.
Correct.
And that's under its inherent equity power, correct?
Yes. Okay. And if I misspoke, what I was trying to get at, I don't think the record shows that there was a lot of evidence argued on the legal remedies, because the parties moved forward on the assumption that it was equity, is my reading of the record.
Right. Okay, thanks.
And that, I believe, it's right in the last page of that November order, paragraph 1 under the wherefore statement. It says, the court overrules a plaintiff's motion based upon Nebraska Revised Statute 25-2001.
Right.
And then paragraph 2 says the equity of what they found. And so we're asking the court just to remand the case to get that legal survey.
Questions? Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Baike has some time remaining.
One of the troublesome things in this case is we're talking about culvert, however you describe culvert. And there is no finding in this case about where the culvert is, whether it's on our property or their property. We're just making assumptions about where it should be, whether we should get a new remedy, et cetera, but there is no evidence presented as to the culvert.
Does that then suggest a remand for a survey is appropriate?
No, it does not. Again, it's their burden to present the evidence, and they did not do that.
Thank you. Appreciate your arguments, counsel. You are excused, and the case is submitted. Next case this afternoon is Travelers Indemnity versus Estate of Evertson.